Student Loan Show, episode 47. Way back in episode 18, we talked about the consequences of going into default on your private student loans. And today we're going to pick up the mantle of defaulted private student loans once again by talking about what you absolutely positively must do the minute that you are contacted by a debt collector. My name is Jay Fleischman. Stick around. It's coming up on the Student Loan Show. Welcome back once again to the Student Loan Show. My name is Jay Fleischman. Thanks so much for being around here today and taking the time to let me into your ears. I don't take that lightly. There's lots of stuff that you could be listening to, so I'm not going to waste your time. We're going to cut right to the chase because today we're going to talk about the things that you need to do the minute that you are contacted by a debt collector. As we talked about in episode 18, you can go into default on a private student loan. It is very different than a federal student loan because private student loans are nothing more than regular private loans. The only time that they're considered any different from any other private loan, any bank loan or credit card or medical or dental bill or what have you, is when you're talking about bankruptcy. So in every other respect, it's just like a private loan of any other stripe. And just like any other normal consumer debt, your federal student loans collections are governed by the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, which is a federal law that governs the ways that collectors can try to collect money from you. There may also be a state counterpart in your state. In California, there's a state counterpart. In North Carolina, in a variety of places, there are. So there may be state counterparts as well. Today, we're going to focus only on the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act because it's federal, it's universal. So no matter what state you live in, the FDCPA, as it is called, is going to apply. So if you get a letter in the mail, here's what you need to do. First thing to do is don't freak out. Do not freak out. It's just a letter and words printed on a piece of paper, stuffed into an envelope, they're not going to hurt you. So don't freak out. And let's start with number one. First thing that you're going to do is read the envelope. Look at the postmark. That postmark is very important because there are certain rights that kick in only within a certain period of time of receiving that initial communication. So take a look at the envelope. Look at the postmark. Check the date. Make sure that you remember that date. Don't throw that envelope out. Also, make sure that the letter is addressed to you. Shouldn't have to say that, but make sure it's addressed to you. Maybe it's addressed to somebody else, and if it's addressed to somebody else, you shouldn't open it because it's not your mail. Then open the envelope, pull out the letter and examine it. Read the letter, read the date on the letter. Is it close to the postmark date or is the letter dated months or maybe even years before the postmark date? That's important. Read the rest of the letter. Determine who it was who sent it to you. Look at the name of the creditor. Do you know who the creditor is? Is it somebody that you have no idea who they are? If you had a student loan with Wells Fargo, are you getting a letter that says that the creditor is Wells Fargo? Somebody else is sending the letter on behalf of Wells Fargo? Or is it somebody else? So what's the name of the creditor? Read the account number. Does the account number look like an account number that you had? You may or you may not know the answer to that, but it's something that you want to pay attention to. Then you want to look at the amount that they say is due on the loan. Does it sound right? Does it match up to a loan that you have? Can you figure this out? Or is there something completely out of whack? Did you have a $5,000 private student loan with Wells Fargo and the letter comes and it says that you owe $25,000. Is the number at least in the range of possibility? So you want to review the envelope. You want to open the letter, figure out who sent it to you. Check the date, check the creditor, check the amount. From there, we're going to move on to step three. See, really easy so far, right? Number three may be a little bit more difficult. It involves reviewing your records. Take a look at your bank statements. Take a look at any other letters that you may have gotten. If you've got online access to any of your student loans, private or federal, hop online. Review your records. Make sure you know who the creditor is and the amount that they're claiming to be due, because if it's wrong, or if you can't verify that it's right, you want to make sure that you know that now. So review your records. Number four, and this is going to be especially important if you don't maintain records. And some people just don't keep old bills. Some people don't keep their bank statements. They figure, well, they're online. Why bother? I've been guilty of that in the past. It's okay to admit that. So if you don't have your records, but even if you do, go ahead and get a copy of your credit report. You can get a free copy once a year. Go to annualcreditreport.com. Don't go to any of the other sites that say they're going to give you a freebie. You get one free credit report from each of the three major repositories. That's Equifax, Experian, and TransUnion. You get once a year, free, no obligation. You don't have to give them your credit card number. You don't have to sign up for anything. It'll take you about 10 minutes for them to verify your information, but you get it for free by law once a year, and it's a full credit report. So get your credit reports because you want to see who it is who's reporting your student loans. Is it the collection agency? Is it this creditor? Is it somebody else that you don't know who they are? You want to make sure that you know who's reporting and what is it that they're reporting. Is this debt collector sending you a bill saying that you owe $5,000 to Wells Fargo and you're in default, but according to your credit report, you're current, or it's not on your credit report at all because it's that old? Well, you want to know that. That's important information. Because if it's not on your credit report, then either it's not your debt, or the debt may be so old that it may no longer be enforceable anymore. Because private student loans, as we've discussed in past shows, come with a statute of limitations. There's only a limited amount of time during which that private student loan is enforceable. So if it's super old, so old that it's fallen off your credit report, well, you may not be required to make any payments, or it may not even be your debt at all. You want to know that. Number five involves asking yourself a question. Do you know enough? Do you know enough about who it is who's sending you these bills? Can you pinpoint who the creditor is and what the amount that they claim to be due is? And are you reasonably sure that this is your debt? If it is, that's great, because now we're going to go on to number six. And by the way, even if you don't have enough information, we're still going to go on to number six, because in number six, you're going to choose the course of action that you want to take. It's like those old books, those choose your own adventure books, where you get to a certain point, it says, if you do this, go to page six. If you go and do that, go to page 12 or whatever it is. Well, same thing. You're going to choose your course of action. Your first course of action is hold out for more information. We don't know enough yet. We don't know if this is the right creditor. We don't know if this is the right amount of money. We don't know if the loan is mine. We don't know if the loan, even if it is mine, if it's legally enforceable or it's past the statute of limitations. So we hold out for more information. That's first choice. Now, if we're holding out for more information, what you want to do is send a validation letter. You get 30 days from the date of the original first communication to request validation and have that request serve as a way of stopping collections. You can request validation at any time, but unless you do it within the 30 days, that request for validation isn't going to stop the collection activities. If you do it within 30 days, then it will stop the collection activities. That validation letter is really going to be your opportunity to say, hey, wait a minute, I can't verify the amount due, or I have no idea who the creditor is, or I don't know when the last time there was a payment made. I don't know. I need you, debt collector, to validate this debt. So you're going to send that letter. You're going to send it by certified mail, return receipt requested, or overnight mail, or priority mail, or some means that allows you to track the letter to make sure that it actually gets to where you want it to go. In response, the debt collector doesn't have to do very much. They don't have to provide you with a copy of the promissory note. They don't have to provide you with proof that they own the debt. They don't have to provide you with a full accounting. All they have to provide you with is, here's who you owe the money to, here's how much you owe, here's when the last payment was made. They need to give you very sketchy information, but at least it's something. Because up until the time that a debt collector, or rather their attorneys, file a lawsuit against you, everything is voluntary. They are voluntarily giving you any more information than the bare bone minimum that's necessary to prove validation under the terms of the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act. You, on the other hand, are voluntarily choosing to make the payment or not make the payment. This isn't a court of law. This is everybody's trying to get along. So if I'm the debt collector, I'm giving you information. If I'm the borrower, then I'm going to either make payment or not. Nobody can force anybody to do anything more than that. But it is a way of getting at least a little bit more information that may put you in a position where you've got enough information to make a real decision, a rational decision, and an intelligent decision about what it is that you're going to do about this debt. So that's holding out for more information. The second course of action is make payment in full. It's easy enough. They send you a letter. They tell you how much you owe. Call them up. You say, okay, I'm going to pay the amount of money. You cut them a check. And that's the end of the story. They cash it. You're paid in full. That is a course of action if you do know enough and you've got the ability to make the payment. But then again, if you had the ability to make the payment, you probably wouldn't be getting a phone call or a letter from a debt collector. So it's an option. It is a course of action, but I understand if that's not realistic. Your third course of action is to try to work out a payment arrangement, either on a monthly basis or as a lump sum settlement for less than the balance due. Private student loans, as we talked about in a prior show, do settle. Sometimes you get a great deal. Sometimes you get an okay deal. Sometimes you don't get a very good deal at all. It really depends upon the individual lender, the individual debt collector, and your particular loan. But they do settle. Compare and contrast that with the federal student loans that don't really settle for too much of a discount, if any. But private student loans do settle. So you may be able to get a settlement deal, or you may be able to work out a monthly payment arrangement if that's something that you feel comfortable doing, if you know enough, if you know that the creditor who's trying to collect is the right creditor, if the amount of money that they're claiming due is pretty much on the money, you can go ahead and do that. Now, a few things. Entering into a payment arrangement with a private student loan debt collector is not taking you out of collection. You're still going to be listed as past due on your credit report because you're not paying according to the original terms and conditions of the original promissory note that was signed when you took out the loan. So you're still going to be in collections unless the debt collector specifically promises that they're going to take you out of collections, and if you have proof of that in writing. Never believe what a debt collector says, by the way, and that's just a good rule of thumb. Never believe what any debt collector says. Never believe what anybody says if you owe the money. Make sure that you get anything in writing, and if you don't get it in writing, then you can't prove it, and if something goes bad, then it's your word against their word. Get it in writing before you make any promise and before you part with any money. You may be able to get that payment arrangement, which, if it's an acceptable payment arrangement to you and the debt collector, then that's going to stop any collection activities. They're not going to go the next step of trying to sue you and get a judgment and do a wage garnishment and maybe freeze your bank accounts if they can do those things in your state, because that's a state matter, or anything else. So the payment arrangement may be a good idea for you. You can also look at the option of maybe settling for less than the full balance due. I do want to let you know that if you settle the account for less than the full balance due, number one, like I said, make sure you get it in writing. Number two, you need to be very, very mindful of the fact that if you settle a debt for less than the full balance due, you're going to get a tax form at the end of the year. It's a 1099. It's called cancellation of debt income. And that amount of money that you saved off the top, the amount of money that you didn't have to pay as a result of the settlement, may be considered taxable income. So you want to talk to your accountant or your tax professional about what the implications are going to be before you go ahead and enter into a settlement, because you want to make sure that it's not going to cost you more money in the long run. And just as an aside, when I say talk to your accountant or tax professional, I mean it. Don't go into H&R Block or Jackson Hewitt or use any of the online services. You need somebody to actually walk through your financial situation to let you know what the numbers are going to be, because if they don't, you're just shooting in the dark and you're never going to hit the target that you want. It doesn't matter how good you are, it's just not going to happen. So make sure that you have that full information. So that's working out the payment arrangement. That's also going for the settlement. Settlements, by the way, tend to be lump sum. Maybe they'll let you go out a little bit. I've seen them go out depending upon the debt collector, depending upon the lender, the creditor, the loan, the borrower's history, all that good stuff. I've seen them go out before litigation. I've seen a year. I've seen 2 years. I seldom, if ever, have seen longer than that. Once you're in litigation, that's when things get really good. I've seen much longer periods of time for settlements. I've seen years. I've seen going up 6, 7, 8 years or more, no interest at a discount. But again, that's in litigation. That means they've already started a lawsuit against you, and that's with having somebody defending you in that case. So you're going to get a better deal in litigation, but depending upon your situation, you may not want to go into litigation. You may just want to get this thing over with. You're going to pay a little bit more. Your terms aren't going to be as good, but at least you'll be able to get the monkey off your back. So that's the last thing that I have to say about the implications of settlement prior to litigation. And your last option is just make them go away. Just do nothing and make them go away. Well, how do you do that? Luckily, the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act gives you a mechanism for making them go away. Well, not entirely go away, but go away in a fashion. Under the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, you can specifically request that a debt collector stop contacting you. It's called a cease and desist letter, and it's very simple. All you need to do is write a letter to the debt collector that says, I refuse to pay. You are no longer allowed to contact me at all. Sign the letter, make a copy, drop it in the mail, send it certified mail, return receipt requested, or some other trackable means, And from the minute that they get it, that debt collector cannot contact you, except they can send you a letter or give you a call and say, hey, we got your letter that said that you didn't want to be contacted anymore. No problem. We're not going to contact you anymore. Have a nice day. The only other thing they can do is they can file a lawsuit against you or send the account back to the private student loan company, and that's the end of it. Now, the student loan company is going to send your account out to another debt collector or maybe to a law firm to file a lawsuit against you or just to send you letters and make phone calls. And if they do that, that's within their rights to do. You can still be sued. So they're not really going away. You're just getting control over your phone and over your mailbox. So you're getting them out of your hair and you're shutting them up. And that may be enough for you. And certainly if the debt is past due enough and you think that maybe it's getting close to the statute of limitations, or you genuinely have no idea who the creditor is and the amount is so completely off and the debt collector isn't giving you the information that you need in order to make a reasonable and rational decision about making a voluntary payment, well, then by all means, send them a letter. Say, look, don't call me, don't write me, leave me alone, I'm not going to pay you. That's it. But bear in mind that the next step may very well be that you get served with a summons and complaint in a lawsuit. And then, of course, you're going to want to answer it. You're going to want to file a response either on your own, and you're certainly free to do that, or what you may want to do is you may want to at least sit down and talk to a lawyer to see how they may be able to get involved, and maybe they'll be able to get you a better deal, or maybe they can see a defense that you don't know about. But you, I think, would do well to talk to a lawyer, even if you don't ultimately hire one for full representation. But if you do get served with a summons and complaint, you definitely want to do something about that. But you need to be aware that that's going to happen, or in all probability, that's going to happen. But this will stop the phone calls. This will stop the letters from this individual debt collector. And by the way, if the debt collector does contact you after you tell them that they're not allowed to do so anymore, then you may be able to sue them for violating your collection rights. And if you do that, then you may be able to get money damages. Your attorney may be able to get their legal fees paid. I know we typically, in my office, take these cases on contingency, which means we don't take any upfront legal fees, because if our client is going to get money in the form of damages from the debt collector for having violated my client's debt collection rights, well, then I'm going to get a percentage of that recovery, even if there's not a separate finding that my legal fees should get paid. Then it makes it easier for my client, but a lot of lawyers will do it that way. So you want to talk to somebody about that. And that's precisely, by the way, why when I was telling you to send out letters before and why I was telling you to make sure that it was trackable and that you kept a copy of the letter and all of that stuff, that's all in the way of proof, really, because if the debt collector violates your debt collection rights under the FDCPA or even under a state law that may be applicable where you live, you want to have the proof, because you don't want to walk into court and say, well, I told them not to call me and they did. And the debt collector turns around and says, well, we never got anything that said that we shouldn't call him. So we just kept calling because we didn't know. So that's something that you want to make sure that you've got the appropriate proof. And those are the 10 things that you need to do the minute that you get contacted the first time by a debt collector. So let's recap. You want to review the envelope and determine the postmark date. You want to open the letter and examine it. Look at the date on the letter. Determine the name of the creditor as well as the amount due. You want to review your records. After that, you want to pull your credit report. Then you want to ask yourself, do I have enough? Do I have enough information? And if you don't, you want to review your courses of action. Either you're going to hold out for more information, you're going to make payment in full, Try to work out a payment arrangement or a settlement if that's in the cards, or you're going to make them go away. Those are the things that you do. You want to get them done immediately because remember, you've got that 30-day window of opportunity to request validation and to be able to have that stop the collection activity immediately. And if you wait longer than 30 days, then you've got a real problem as far as getting that validation and getting them to stop collection while you are investigating whether or not you have enough information to go on to make a decision on what you're going to do about that private student loan. That's it. Follow those steps and you're going to be in great shape. Head on over to studentloanshow.com/SLS 047 and you can pick up all the show notes, all the links to all of the things that we talked about today, some more information, as well as a link to our closed Facebook group. Our closed Facebook group is where a lot of the action happens. This is where people are talking to each other, trading information. There are a lot of borrowers there. There are a bunch of lawyers in there as well, looking to answer questions, telling their own stories about what they're going through with respect to their student loans, so that this way you know what you're up against when you're talking to a debt collector or a particular servicer. And you also don't feel so alone because you're not alone. There are so many people who are in exactly your situation. So head on over to studentloanshow.com/SLS 047. Check out the show notes. Check out the links to more information. Click that link to join our Facebook group. I'd love to see you in there. I'm going to see you back here next week at the Student Loan Show. We're going to be on episode 48. Join me back here and I will look forward to it. Until then, please remember, always look both ways before crossing the street.